This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I will be talking to Rita Moreau, and we are going to be talking about our mothers, because today would be my mother's 100th birthday. So we will have a conversation about the influence our mothers had on our reading habits. So I'm looking forward to that. But right now, I get to turn to somebody who is absolutely brilliant. I am so thrilled with this book. It just took my breath away. I'm so I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, James Brosnahan, right? Brosnahan.
Yes.
And the name of your book is Justice at Trial: Courtroom Battles and Groundbreaking Cases. And it is such a great book. It is. I can't tell you what this book did to me. I was so enthralled with it. It is better than a thriller. I haven't read a thriller that excited me so much as this book. And I wanted to really compliment, the foreword is done by, written by Erwin Chemerinsky, right?
Yes.
And he said, this is a must read for all lawyers. And I would like to say it is a must read for everybody. Because in this book, you have the past 50 years, the history of America is in this book. If people read this book, they will learn so much and be so excited to learn more about our history just from reading this book.
Well, you are so kind, and you have made my day. You have absolutely made my day. I think writers will appreciate that when you write a book, and then someone like yourself, very impressed with the people that you've had on your program over the last 7 years, I must say. But I really do appreciate your kind words, and they do a lot for a writer. I think that's terrific, and that's great. Yeah.
Well, as I said, it starts off with the story of a case, your first case,
yeah.
And the way you write that, just that opening prologue, it's. You make it so exciting. It's really great. So do you want to start with that first case, and then we'll get to your childhood?
Well, sure. And I walked into the U.S. Attorney's office from my very first day of work, never having tried a case, and on a Monday, and on Tuesday, my boss came in and said, there's a trial. We were very understaffed in Arizona, which is where I was at that time, and I said, sure, this is what I went to law school for. I wanted to try cases, very single-minded focus on trying cases. So I said, sure, and he gave it to me, and I opened it up. It was a first-degree murder case that asked for capital punishment. Now, several people have commented, my friends have commented, and said, well, that's not right for you to, an inexperienced person. I said, no, it's not right, but it was Monday morning, the following Monday morning. I had 6 days to prepare. So I tried the case, and it was a case of a stabbing on the Pima Reservation south of Phoenix, Arizona, a terrible stabbing, and the defendants were juvenile. And the first question I had to decide, should I ask for the death penalty? And I had written in law school in opposition to the death penalty, and this case was juvenile, so I decided with the boss, I went to see him, tell him what was involved, and we did not ask for the death penalty. What happens in the trial is in the book, and I'm glad you mentioned it because, of course, by the end of the trial, I thought I knew what I was doing, which is wrong.
Well, I wanted people to know that this book starts off with a punch. I mean, I love it. It's a great opening for you and to sort of lead us into the way that you write. And although some of the cases are perhaps well-known cases and people might vaguely know about them, you make each one into an absolute little thriller. It's like reading little thriller books all throughout throughout your book. And also the fun part is in some of them you play Sherlock Holmes too, so that's fun. But
it is. It's. I thought people that like mysteries might like this book. I'm hoping so, and I agree with you.
Oh, they have to. This is wonderful. I, as I'm reading it, I kept saying, "Well, I wish he would write a book just about that and make a novel." You have like at least 15 chapters in here where you could take the cases and turn them into a novel alone. So. But let's step back a little, because I want what is wonderful about you is that you did this coming from, you know, a very poor background, and sometimes people, you know, say, oh, it's so difficult to make it, it's so difficult. It's difficult to make it, that's true, but, and you didn't do the best in school, much like Winston Churchill. Your grades weren't the best, but tell us how you started. Your life was, first of all, very strange in the way it started.
Yeah, I started with a diagnosis, and I've never known whether it was right, of rheumatic fever when I was 3 years old, and a doctor who thought that I should stay in bed until he saw what developed. I was in bed from the age of 3 to 6, and I looked out the window. My father, by the way, had a very low-paying job as kind of a bookkeeper at the Boston Symphony, which is your theme song. You know, that theme song
I
is
know.
A recording of the Boston Pops and Arthur Fiedler. But so there I was. Finally, we had the money to get a new doctor, a second opinion, and he said, look, things get better or they get worse. They don't stay the same. Let the kid out. And so I got out and went into the first grade, and I couldn't read, of course, and had no education of any form. I listened to the radio a lot, and that's what my entertainment. My father was my savior, and that's in the book, and I'm so pleased I got a chance to say that out loud, because he never gave up on me. And then in grade school, I did very poorly. I actually repeated the fourth grade, and it's in the book. But my seventh grade teacher saw something in me and set me up to skip the grade, and I got into high school. And then sports was my savior. I don't think I had a lot of confidence at that point, but I played 3 sports in high school and then 2 in college at Boston College. And at Boston College, the Jesuits had me studying, reading, and I had a brain. It was like a discovery of something helpful that you find. And I got all kinds of good grades. I was on the dean's list and all that. And I got from there to law school and went to the Harvard Law School. And that's the story. One reason I wrote the book, frankly, is how many kids are out there with all kinds of problems. You know, worse than what I had, and might read the book. I hope they do, and realize, you know, you just kind of keep going, and if you get lucky, as I did, you can have a break.
And you can overcome things. You have these problems. Sometimes you don't do well in school, and if something just hits you at the right time, some spark, perhaps a teacher says something nice, perhaps somebody says something nice, and something spurs you, and then you're willing to do the work, because in the end, it all comes down to being willing to do the work.
That's right. And I never had a problem with that. I worked at jobs starting when I was 14, of all kinds of jobs, and guess what? That helped me in the practice of law, having worked with all kinds of people and getting to know how they think and all of that stuff. That was very helpful.
Oh, it is. I think it's so wonderful to work when you're young. I started with a paper route when I was 7 years old. I was the first girl.
Did you? Yeah.
The first girl in my town to have a paper route, and I worked from the age of seven. I always had a job. Always, at least one job. Usually two jobs, because you're right. You learn so much about life, about people, how to deal with people. And it's so much better than letting your kids, sit around on these electronic devices. They don't learn anything from that. So,
you know, in our firm, Morrison Forrester, we do a lot of hiring. We do a lot of interviewing. And my favorite question is, did you ever work behind a counter? You know, if you do that, you realize moods of people from terrific to not terrific. And you just begin to understand what the world is like and how you can function in it. I did just about every job. I laid blacktop on it. I did construction in Boston, which was my original home. Juggle stone, as they call it. We put in curbing and, you know, all these kind of things with working men, in a lot of them, but women also.
Well, and you chose to work through school, which I think is so good. So many of these kids have fallen, in recent years, they've fallen into this trap of, well, we'll get a loan and we can then go to school, but we can also have time to party. But I think it is so much better if you have to work for it and don't build up those loans.
I wasn't a big party guy, but I didn't mind a party in Boston. We used to go to wakes of people we didn't know. And we would go in and we would, you know, the three teenage high school kids, and we'd go in and say, oh, yeah, it's terrible about Johnny passing away. That's terrible. Now let me have the orders, you know. So I loved writing this book, and I believe it or not, I know some people don't like to do editing. I love the editing because of the learning that I was doing about style. I was reading good novels at the time to get ideas of how you do write this kind of book. A memoir is a tricky business. I mean, are you being accurate? Is your memory right? Do some research, which I did a lot of. And so that whole process, I really did enjoy it. I worked 4 hours a day, 5 days a week for 3 years. And I edited with the help of one professional and my wife, who was a judge for many years, but she had been a legal editor, and she actually edited my material, if you can imagine, and our marriage is as solid as ever, despite some of my gems that, you know, she took out too much, she says, too much. So all that was going on for the last 3 years. And so I now have a little goatee befitting a writer, you know.
Oh, good.
So I'm into it. I really am.
Well, you should be. You deserve to be, because this is a great book. Now, I'm going to let you pick the first case you want to talk about. And then I'm going to pick the second one because I know something about it.
Okay. I think that, I will say preliminarily, I picked from the 150 trials that I had, 19 that represented current issues like the Mexican border and corporate officials and a man who was making bombs and was accused of being a terrorist in San Francisco. And so I did all that. I think the case I would mention is Patty Dunn, who was the 17th most powerful woman in business in the world. And she was chair of Hewlett-Packard. And had a resplendent business record, having come herself from modest means, and worked her way up in the business world, a very respected person, and an aging male, a very powerful corporate financial man, got angry at her unfairly, I must say, about an event at the board of directors and hired a staff of top leading people to go after her, which he did, and she got indicted. And I want to stop for a second and say to your audience, you know, trial lawyers are dealing on a regular basis in the criminal side of things with people that had the world at their beck and call, and the next day it feels to them like they're in the bottom, and you talk with them in jail cells and all that. I try to give those atmospheres a punch into the case. But anyway, one thing led to another, and she's indicted for privacy violations, which was unfair, totally unfair. And 3 days after her indictment, we had a decision to make as to whether she should go on 60 Minutes. That is not something that lawyers would ever do. They shouldn't do it. But I do a lot of lecturing, and one of the things I tell, I'm going to do some next week, and one of the things I tell the lawyer, there are no rules. There's only situations. And Patty Dunn, had the personality and was articulate, and we decided to put her on in front of 14 million people to talk about why she was innocent. And she did that, and it worked. So the rest is the story, which is suspenseful, as you say.
It is. It's great. Yeah. I'm glad you selected that one because it is a great story. Again, it's a page-turner because you don't know. People don't know what's going to happen. And
yep.
Patty Dunn was, you know, on the cover of Time magazine, and everybody was always talking about her. And we had a recent case where another very famous woman was on the cover of everything and landed up in jail. So this was fun that you don't know for sure what's going to happen, and you write it beautifully. And then
thank you.
The story that I wanted to mention, which it is just great. It's the one that you mentioned about a man accused of making bombs. And my husband's cousin worked for Bechtel in San Francisco for many years. And so we were always sort of aware of this case early on. So when I got to this one, I thought, oh my goodness, this is fascinating. So just give the lead into it a little bit about the Philippines.
It's another story who had everything, and they were connected to not only San Francisco, but connected in terms of his wife's family with the Philippines. And they were very well-to-do with the Philippines until Marcos came over and took power and ran it despotically. And it's one adventure after another, ending up with a jury trial and with jurors accusations that he was making bombs in his house. And it really is a detective story.
It really is. And in this case, you were I will say you were very Sherlock Holmes.
I love that stuff, and we don't have time, or the book doesn't have space for me to tell you the thrills that I got out of figuring out what happened here, which is the central issue, in my opinion, of every case. What really happened? What were they doing? What were they thinking? What is this about? And I did try to get the essence of that into that chapter. So I'm glad you liked that.
Oh, you did. It's just, I thought it was so clever. The minute I won't give it away, but people, you have to read this story because this little detective work here that James did is fantastic. It's something right out of a movie. You could do a movie with this, just with this chapter alone.
I think a lawyer reading that chapter would appreciate that. It's 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. The trial is starting on Monday, and I suddenly have an insight into something.
It's thrilling. You make it so exciting. I mean, and it's wonderful. You take not that many pages to tell this story, to give the background, to explain about the your client. And it's just, it's beautiful writing. Now, when did you started off as a prosecutor.
Yeah.
Explain when you started not being a prosecutor. Which did you like best, the prosecutor side or?
Well, you know, I like best. I was defense lawyer minded in law school. I never really lost that. So I thought of myself as a prosecutor, a very sensitive prosecutor. But I'll tell you, you really get into it as a prosecutor when you see people doing really bad things. And I did that for a total of 5 years and went from there to private practice, making it clear that I wanted to defend criminal cases, which was not done at that time. That was the 1960s. It was not done in big law firms. I went to a middle-sized law firm and began to try all kinds of cases, which is, I think, distinctive in the book. We live in an age of specialization where, and there's a lot of benefits to that. You know, the patent lawyers specialize and so forth and so on. But I wanted to do it all. If somebody said, we have a trial, will you do it? I would say yes. And then I would try to figure out how to do it. And so there also was, for many years, many trials that occurred of all kinds, more on the civil side than there are today. And so I was pretty much, 1 year I was in trial in two cases for the whole year. As a matter of fact, I was in trial for about 18 months. And that has great benefit. There's a lot of your fatigue involved, and you have to keep your mind straight so that you're not exhausted on Friday afternoon and all those things. But it's the diversity of the cases. And then I went with Morrison Foerster 47 years ago. I practiced for 60 years and was tremendously energized by it. The adrenaline gets going and you're in a mood. I mean, you're going to do this, whatever it is. So.
Well, you know what I love about a couple of things that you do in this book that are really great. You talk about the team that you bring along with you to a trial, and you give them credit and you compliment them when they do cross-examining and when they prepare for a trial. I love that, and I can see that all of the lawyers who worked with you must admire you so much because of that very giving nature that you have.
Well, I did so much teaching. You know, I taught at Berkeley Law for 10 years, but I did so much teaching that I would actually do it during trial when there was a moment. I would say to an associate, you know, you did a great job with that witness. The one thing is when he says something like that, there's another thing you might do, and here it is. So that became a continuous. But you were right about an important thing. The first 12 years, I had nobody. I didn't have a legal assistant. I didn't have an associate particularly working with me, with a couple of exceptions. And then, because cases were getting bigger, damages were going from, you know, $3 million to $200 million. Or $800 million. I had cases where $800 million is demanded, and a couple of those. So for those, you have teams. And I tell the story of several of the associates in some detail and what was like for them to do their first trial and what I what I witnessed in them, the skills that they had. I have been extraordinarily lucky. There's just no explanation. I just have had breaks of things, and here are these brilliant associates. They really are fantastic. They want to try cases, and I would work with them, and I would get the benefit from all that.
Well, you have been very blessed, and I'm sure that all the people who have worked with you and all the people that you've helped over the years feel that they were blessed with what you've done. And I thought it was so cute at the beginning how you really, you know, were able to go to Harvard. There's a little poem in there. You met somebody very, well, for people who know, Henry Cabot, who served on the Boston Symphony. And I love that you wrote this little ditty, because I remember hearing it when I was quite young. I don't know why somebody said this to me, but it's, and this is good old Boston, home of the bean and the cod, where the Lowells talk only to the Cabots, and the Cabots talk only to God.
Well, I mean, that captures the 1950s in Boston, and, I'm an Irish-American. There's a lot of history in Boston, and old history doesn't matter these days, but this man gave me the money, which I did not have, would not go to the Harvard Law School except for Henry Cabot.
Well,
and couldn't have been nicer when I met him. He was a little bit interested in athletics at Boston College, so we talked about that. But then he pulled out his checkbook and he gave me the money.
And then he said
to me words that I will never forget, and I'm glad I got a chance to write them. He said, "If you need more, let me know." And there was just nothing like that. I never went back for more money. I worked in law school.
And I'm sure he followed your career and was very, very proud, of you.
He did. I wrote him letters. I just had a murder case, you know, from the Pima Reservation, whatever it was. It was a loan, by the way. I had to pay 1%. You know, it was a very careful financial person, and we paid it all back.
Well, I think it's a wonderful book. It's called Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles and Groundbreaking Cases. Now, we didn't have time, really, to talk about everything. I would love to talk to you about the Supreme Court part. That would be great. And I'd also love to talk to you about your marriage, because I found that interesting. So will you come back if I send you a date?
Yes. I would enjoy that very much. Thank you.
Okay. So I'm going to send you an open date. Like in about 2 weeks from now. And I want you back here. I want to go over a few more cases with you and to talk more, because I think you're inspiring. The important thing is, now, when you come from a background where you didn't have a lot, you worked hard, and as you said, sports saved you because it taught you discipline and gave you pride in what you were doing. And I think that is so important for so many young people in this generation. So you're going to come back, and we're going to talk more, okay?
You're very kind, and I really do appreciate your thoughtfulness, and thank you. I'd be happy to come back.
Okay, because I want to hear more about your wife. I think she did a great job editing this book.
The only problem with today is her story is just fantastic, and she was in my law class. That's all I'm going to say for the moment.
But well, you're going to be back here in about 2 or 3 weeks, and we're going to talk more, okay?
All righty.
All right, thank you so much. James J. Brosnahan, the name of the book is Justice at Trial, Courtroom Battles and Groundbreaking Cases, and this book is for everybody because it is actually a thriller. It's an amazing memoir about an amazing guy. Thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I love this book. I'm telling you, you read this book. If you're an author, and you read this book, you will come away with maybe, I don't know, 20 ideas for a novel. Okay, we're going to have a commercial break now. We'll just do the commercials now, and then we'll talk to Rita Moreau.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi! This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest, Rita Moreau. Hi, Rita. Hello, Rita.
Rita. Hello. Okay.
Well, Rita is the author of a wonderful series called the Ghost and Camper Cookie Mystery Series.
And it is kooky. If you enjoy kooky, you would enjoy these books.
Well, I do, and so many other people do, because I love when you always say kooky.
Or, as Mabel or Irma would say, wowzer.
Wowzers, yes. Well, you have two of the most memorable characters in Cozy Mystery World, because Irma and Mabel are so terrific. I remember the first time I sent, well, of course, you know my sister Natalie is the connoisseur of Cozy Mysteries, and she loves your books. The first time she read Wheeler Dealer, I remember she said, "Oh, this is so good. Oh, I love Irma." And in the book, of course, Irma is a ghostly figure, and Mabel.
Yes, she is.
Mabel is somebody who's hit the road. She's hit the road, right?
Yes, and first of all, I am honored that Natalie enjoys my books. But yes, Mabel and Irma are two interesting characters, and as authors may tell you, as you continue writing, your characters start to speak to you.
Definitely, and they start to speak to your fans, because my sister, and now my sister-in-law, they can talk about Irma like they know her. It's like, what? They'll see a Marilyn Monroe movie, and they'll say, oh, you know, Irma should wear that dress.
Well, Irma does have quite a costume outfit, so and she loves to dress up, so to speak.
Yeah,
but yeah, they're interesting characters.
Yeah, we have to explain that Mabel was divorced.
Mabel was at the time of her life. She would tell you, "I'm at the point where I'm going to be doing a lot of baking with my grandchildren," and lo and behold, her husband leaves her for a, let's just call her a gold digger. And Mabel says, well, the heck with this. I'm going to get out on the road. And so she, along with her friend Lily, who helped her purchase a vintage camper, an Airstream, hits the road, and this particular Airstream comes with no extra charge, haunted by Irma.
And Irma's not leaving anytime soon because she has to do a lot of good deeds, and she's sort of roping poor Mabel in with
Irma. Irma is stuck in purgatory, and in order to get past those pearly gates, she has to do good deeds for us humans on Earth. And it seems top of the list is solving murders.
So it keeps you busy. You started off, of course, in Fish Camp, Florida. And Mabel is off and running all across the country.
All across the country, yes. We started in Florida, and we made our way to Savannah, Georgia.
And that was book one, then, Wheeler Dealer.
That was Wheeler Dealer. And then we made our way to Nashville, Murder on Honky Tonk Row. Then we made our way to the Badlands, Murder in the Badlands, and then Murder in the Rockies. And now we're back in Florida for Murder in Wacky Florida. Because Florida is wacky.
Definitely. And Mabel gets to meet up with a whole bunch of wacky woo-woo widows and other miscellaneous people. So this new book that you're working on right now is going to be fun.
It is, and I'm having a lot of fun writing it. But yeah, we have all sorts of, we may have characters that from the past, they actually might be tied into my first series, my Mary Catherine Mahoney series. But yeah, they're just hilarious. And I'm glad my readers enjoy these characters.
Well, they do. And as I said, for my sister and my sister-in-law, Debbie, they'll be watching mostly, they love to watch the old movies, of course, TCM, and they'll be watching, you know, Gold Diggers of 1935 or something, and they'll sort of text each other, say, "Oh, I think that would be great on Irma." they get ideas.
Well, good. It helps me too. So if they have any ideas, tell them to send them my way.
I will, because the wonderful thing, you know, of course, I'm always encouraging people to read, and you, of course, have, you know, when you retired. You were most people who retire, they say, "I'm retired. I'm not doing anything." But you got right into writing.
Well, I'm not one to sit still, and I did retire. And my husband George and I, we actually, like Irma and Mabel, hit the road in a Bluebird motorhome, and we went all across the country. So that has given me some inspiration for these books. But yes, I can't sit still. I have to keep moving.
Well, of course, both of us were very lucky that we had mothers who encouraged us to read and to love books.
Yes. My mother definitely did. And my mother encouraged all of us to keep our dreams alive because she did.
Well,
she did. And I understand this is a special day for your mother.
Yes, she would be 100 years old today. And
wow.
I think about it. I think about her. And she was so great. She was so wonderful. And, you know, for people who are blessed with a great parents, and I was, she taught me to read because we were very poor and we didn't have a lot. And we used to sit next to her as she would read comic books to us, and she would run her fingers under the words. And that's how I learned to read. And, I mean, that's why by the time I was three, I could read. She would play these little games, the phonics rhyming games, like can, ban, you know, like that. She'd take a few letters and have us make words, just, you know, really busy work, give us a piece of paper, and she would write, you know, a word down and say, sometimes she'd write a long word down and she'd say, "How many words can you make out of that?" All just, you know, to play with letters.
And so she was lots of fun. She was very silly. In a time when almost all mothers were wearing shirtwaist dresses, my mother wore pedal pushers. And she was like talk of the town. She was, but she liked to play with baseball. And during World War II, she had been on one of those, you know, women's baseball teams, and so she always liked to play baseball. So she was always welcome on the teams when we used to play baseball. And she was very funny, and she also loved to dance. And I want to play a song that I'd come home from school at 3:30. I remember it was, I'd get home at 3:30, and she'd always have either Dean Martin or Edie Gourmet.
Frank Sinatra.
She loved those records. And this is a song from Edie Gourmet. And when she'd play it, we would actually do what the song says.
Cool.
Mama, teach me to dance. Mama, teach me to dance. Think of all the fun you had when you and Dad would cut a rug, then you'd kiss and you'd hug. Mama, show me the way how to sway when they play. If I knew a step or two the same as you, I'd have a chance for romance at a dance. Suppose I meet somebody very sweet. If he says, ooh, I would love to dance with you. What do I do? Mama, teach me to dance. Once I learn how to dance, you can leave the rest to me. And you'd hug. Mama, get off my love. Mama, get off my love.
If I knew a step or two the same as you, I'd have a chance for romance and a dance.
Suppose I meet somebody very sweet. If he says, ooh, Mama, teach me to dance. Once I learn how to dance, you can leave the rest to me. And never fear, you're gonna hear wedding bells, Mama dear. Wedding bells, Mama dear.
Okay. Was our favorite song, and I'd get home, and she'd
I was dancing. You know, I have to tell you something. Your mother and my mother had some things in common. My mother also played softball, and my mother, during her teenage years, would put on USO shows for our guys, and she taught me how to jitterbug.
That's wonderful. Well, it was so, we love that song, and I would get so excited. And it was funny, my mother, she loved dancing, and she and my father were in a dance contest. And
cool.
And the first prize was a trip, you know, lived in northern Michigan, and the first prize was a trip to Chicago. In those days, it was a big deal. There was a direct train. It was a first-class trip down to Chicago and a weekend in a hotel, which, you know, that's where all of the big shows, so many of the big radio programs broadcast out of these big hotels in Chicago. So that was a really great prize. And so they could have won it. They were the last two. It was an elimination kind where you eliminate people. And they were the last two. They could have won it. My father and mother were great dancers. But my mother didn't want it. She wanted the second prize, which was a beautiful mahogany dictionary stand with a huge Webster's dictionary. She wanted second prize. And she didn't need that trip, but that's what she got. And for all of my childhood, that was our book. That was the main, you know, we would go to that book. We'd spend our winters thumbing through that book. In those days, you had a dictionary, you know, with those little markers for each letter.
Yes.
And my sister.
Encyclopedia.
Yeah, my sister, who's older than I, but she would pick a letter, and then we'd go there, and she'd just go through the letters, you know, starting maybe a letter Z, and she'd just read them down and teach them to me. It was wonderful.
Wow. You know, birthdays are very important for my mother, so I'm sure she has a birthday cake for your mother.
Well, I'm very glad, Rita, that you joined me today, because I love hearing about your mother. And her name was, tell everybody her name. So that
my mother's name was Georgia.
Georgia
Reinhardt.
I love that name. So, and my mother's name was Audrey. And I think you know, together we're very proud of them, and I think they're very proud of us. So again, your new series is going to be. This wacky Florida book is going to be lots of fun. I know that. And meanwhile, people can get they can find you on Facebook.
Well, they can find me everywhere. The easiest way to find me is at my website, RitaMoreau.com.
Okay, go there, and then of course all of your books are online, and
yes.
People can go there and get them. And it's this is a time for binge reading. You can start at book one if you want and go through. You have four books, and it's lots of fun. And everybody, once people read this, they'll never forget Irma and Mabel.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you to all my readers.
And thank you also for doing Book Buzzes for us. We love you, Rita.
Thank you. Thank you, Patsy.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon, okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Okay, well, Rita is fantastic, and next week I'll be playing two new book buzzes that she did for us, because all of the authors who come on Joy on Paper, they all love when she does a book buzz for them. Now, I'm going to, in a little while, I'm going to end with a song. When I always end the program, you know, about how you should write, that the Joy on Paper idea is that get your words down. And I was listening, I don't listen to Madonna that often, but I listened to this older song of Madonna's, and the lyrics are great, because she's saying in there that everybody's a star, you can try, don't put it off, you can do it if you want. And so we'll end the program with Madonna's song, and I think we have it. Oh, we don't have it? I thought we did. Oh, maybe not. Okay, well, then I'll end the program next week with it, because I wanted... you know, when I play the Edie Gourmet song, it's... You know, this is this is such a beautiful song, and nobody really listens to this kind of music that much. But it's very meaningful. Her story, Edie Gourmet's story of... Her own success is an inspirational story, and her voice is so beautiful, and these songs hold up. This is, I don't know, it must be 70 years maybe, something like that. I don't remember when she started, but that Edie Gourmet song is so beautiful. So I hope that you will think about just clicking on and listening to some really lovely music from the olden days, because for me, it reminded me of my mother. She was wonderful, and to think, and so many people do. If you're lucky, you have in your family, you have somebody who lives to be 100. It's great, and that's why I'm always telling you, write your stories, keep your stories for your family, get them down on paper, and celebrate. And if you have somebody who's getting older, start sitting with them and collecting their stories, because they have a story. Now, as I talked earlier to James Brosnahan, his stories are so beautifully written, and he has put down all of the things that he remembers about his important trials, and he's preserved them. And if he hadn't done that, people wouldn't have this information. But he's done it in a great way. He's written these stories, and you can do it too. So I hope that if anything, that you absolutely start thinking about writing your stories down. You might not, you know, write a bestseller, but if you have it and you preserve it for your family, that would be great. So again, one of the things that I will be having also, Bill Larson, our legal eagle, is going to be on Joy on Paper in a few weeks. And again, we're asking for any questions you have. There's been a lot of things happening with AI. Now, of course, we have the Writers Guild strike, and we have the actors strike. But this AI business is important, and I think it is happening at such a fast pace now with AI taking over, and it's something that's troubling, and I'm worried myself about how much people are going to be depending on AI rather than actually doing the research themselves. You can ask AI to do the research for you, but you don't learn that way. The most fun I have had in being involved in books is doing the research. You will start on your own. You will look at one thing, and then you read a footnote, and you follow that footnote to the next book, and then you follow another footnote to another book. And in no time at all, you find you've read five books to come out with one idea. And it's so much fun, and it expands your mind instead of depending on AI to give you the answer. It's better if you find it yourself. It's original, it means something to you, and it will touch the heart of your readers. Because in the end, readers will know there is a difference between whatever AI is going to come out with and what a real human being with a heart will come out with. So I hope that you will all think about it. If you have any questions about AI, though, send it to me and patsy.radio@gmail.com, and I'll tell Bill Larson, and he'll answer your questions. Meanwhile, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or maybe if you're lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. Say something nice to somebody. I'm running out of time. I said something nice to Big Ed. He saluted me. I saluted him. Everybody have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Stay cool and read a good book.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3